is a Bramble Jam podcast.
Hi, I'm Bran, and I love good Christmas movies like the one that came out post-92.
I'm Alonzo, and I'm here to drag Bran through the beautiful history of pre-1992 Christmas movies, and this
is the Deck the Hallmark Podcast! Yes, Alonzo, it's Monday again, week 3 of 25 in this little quest we're calling the 25 Weeks of Christmas. So far, Alonzo, the feedback has been good. People are excited about this. So, and I think people really loved your 15-minute rant on Jingle All the Way last week. I think that really connected with people. That's the thing I'm most excited. Yes, I'm excited about watching movies I've never seen before and just becoming a better person because of it. But I'm really just here for the rants from Alonzo.
Well, so, you know, you asked. What can I tell you?
That's exactly right. It is a pre-92 week. Our first one was week one with A Shop Around the Corner, 1940. Yep. I believe you're going in some sort of order, correct?
So yes, this is a chronological order. The further along we get in this, the closer to your date of birth we will be coming. Maybe even a ringer from after you were born that I know you've not seen.
I'd greatly appreciate that. And as we get closer, obviously 2025. It's an odd number. So at some point we will throw it out to the people for recommendations, a movie that we haven't covered that maybe Alonzo somehow hasn't seen. So an obscure movie I think would be a fun one that people really love. So you can start throwing that out on the social medias or email us at hello@deckthehallmark.com, comments of YouTube, however you want to do it. Let us know what week 25 should be. But I'm excited for the journey, Alonzo. It's going to be a lot of fun for me. Every week, I think it's going to be a lot of fun for you. It's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster.
And I think that's good. Look, I live in hope that you're either going to make me rethink something that it turns out I like after all, or introduce me to something that I missed, because like people think that if you're a professional film critic, you've seen everything. And trust me, none of us have. I know some people have seen more than me, more than most, but I think everybody's got their gaps somewhere along the way. So, it's anybody's ball game. It's very exciting. I'm thrilled to be doing this. So yeah, I'm picking this week and, yes. We are staying in 1940.
Oh, thank God. The year 1940. Yeah.
The year 1940.
Man, they had multiple movies out that year, huh?
Oh, just wait till we get to 1947. Like, pack a lunch. We're going to be there for a while.
Oh, good. I don't want to move too quickly through the 40s.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, there was a film industry then, Bran, and you'd be shocked to know how many movies came out then and how often people went to the movie theaters back then too, in the pre-television era. So this,
can I ask you a question? So The Shop Around the Corner, do you know when that movie was released to theaters? Was it released at Christmas time or?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I'll look that up. And
as we're back in 1940, I'm interested in the release. Obviously, now, if it's a Christmas movie, it's coming out around Christmas. Sure. Or even Christmas adjacent. It's coming out at Christmas time. Obviously, it's a good time for movies because people go to the movies on Christmas. But also, it's just that's the market. And so I'm interested in how that's changed, especially since the 1940. Oh, yeah.
Believe me, when we get to Miracle on 34th Street, there's a whole discussion about why that intentionally did not come out at Christmas time. In fact, oops, sorry, I just gave away one of the
features. I'm not surprised. You pretty much knew
that was coming, I think. Yeah. But no, I mean, that's a whole other discussion about how, like, really the idea of what we think of as the Christmas movie now didn't really happen until television. This notion that at that season of the year, there would be specific movies that we would plan to watch. And I just looked, actually, this one came out in January of 1940. So not even thinking about Christmas. So this is a film that I had never heard of or had only heard a little bit about. And around the time that I was writing Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Shout out.
I'm always working it. I was the book came out in 2010. I was, you know, doing most of the writing and researching in 2009. That was around the time that Turner Classic Movies kind of rediscovered and reamplified the film Remember the Night, which is a romantic comedy starring Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray. They made several films together, most famously a movie that is diametrically the opposite of Remember the Night, a noir film called Double Indemnity, which is sort of the classic case of, you know, she's the unhappy rich wife, he's the insurance agent, and they, you know, like conspire to kill her husband so she can collect the insurance money. And of course, everything goes downhill from there. But this is not that. This is a very sweet comedy where he is a district attorney in Manhattan. She gets arrested for shoplifting right before Christmas. And he decides, rather than have her be stuck in jail for the entire Christmas holiday, to give her a ride home to Indiana, where he lives, where he's going to spend Christmas, where she is also from. And because of circumstances, they wind up spending the holiday together. And you see how this
is it a fake relationship?
It is not a fake relationship. They're all very straightforward about it. Okay. But it is a movie about it's about a woman who has, you know, dealt with a lot of, you know, crappy stuff in her life, and an idea of who she might have been had she been raised in a more sort of loving and supportive household the way that Fred McMurray was. It's got a ton of Christmas in it. I think you're really going to like that. They're incredibly charismatic and romantic together. This movie was written by Preston Sturges, who is considered like one of the great American screenwriters. He did, you know, Hail the Conquering Hero and Miracle in Morgan's Creek and Sullivan's Travels. So this is a classic. I'm so glad that I was able to catch up with it while I was writing the book, and that now TCM, like, they air it every year. They put out a nice Blu-ray a couple of years ago. It hops in and out of streaming like with alarming frequency. When Peacock launched, it was on Peacock, but now it's not there, and it's not streaming anywhere, but it will be in a few months. Like, it's a weird whack-a-mole with this movie. But again, I'm always a big fan of physical media, so buy that DVD, buy that Blu-ray, and you'll have it forever.
I'm sure it's a library situation as well. If you're, you can also go to your local library, yeah, might be there. So wait, real quick, tell me the title. Remember the Night.
Remember the Night. Yes.
I've never heard of this title before.
Okay.
And who are the leads?
Fred McMurray, who you might know, there was a popular 60s sitcom called My Three Sons.
Yeah.
He was the dad.
Okay. His name does do something.
He was also in the original Flubber movies back in the day.
Oh yeah. Now you're talking.
And then Barbara Stanwyck, who is like, you know, a screen legend. And then also on TV, she was on like The Big Valley and, you know, Dynasty 2, the Colbys, and she's a Hollywood legend. So if you don't know who these people are, this is a great introduction to both of them, and I think you'll like this one a lot.
I gotta say, the little synopsis you gave me it piqued my interest. I'm into this idea. So
there's even a little bit of road trip, which is like, I know Panda's, you know, thing.
Oh, maybe Panda can come over and watch us during the break. I think that'd be great. All right, Remember the Night. I'm going to go watch it. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll break it down. I'm very excited about it here on Deck the Hallmark. We're back in the same clothes on the same day.
Absolutely. Let's go with that.
That's right. I watched a full movie and five seconds. Remember the Night, 1940. Back in 1940. Alonzo, this is true. Some people said, hey, could we get a little longer synopsis?
Yes.
Like you guys normally do on Deck the Hallmark, so that if I don't get to see it or it's hard to find, like Remember the Night is currently, I don't feel so left out. And so we will do that. And
yes,
whoever brings the movie will do the little synopsis. So, Alonzo, I will turn it over to you to give us a little something extra. What was Remember the Night?
I was a little nervous because you are the king of the plot synopsis. But then I remember that I wrote plot synopses for all these movies in my book. So I'm just gonna cheat and read from there. Just before Christmas, shoplifter Lee gets nabbed stealing a bracelet. New York City DA John, in a hurry to get out of town and attempting to outmaneuver Lee's attorney, demands that the trial be postponed until January, so he'll have time to get an expert witness. Feeling bad that Lee will be stuck in jail over the holidays, John gets shady character Fat Mike to bail her out. Misunderstanding John's intentions, Fat Mike hauls Lee up to John's apartment. An apologetic John takes her to dinner and discovers they're both from Indiana, so he offers Lee a ride home to spend Christmas with her family. After a very chilly reception from Lee's mother, John takes her home with him to spend Christmas with his mother. John and Lee grow close and discover they're fond of each other, but what's going to happen when they have to return to the courtroom on opposite sides?
I'll tell you what happens. You know. Oh, gosh. All right, let's talk about it. Alonzo, you brought it. You yes. said that you mentioned earlier that you didn't see it until later in life, until you were writing your book.
Yeah.
And so I imagine you haven't seen it a ton of times since then.
It's become a staple. It's become one that I often go to now during the holidays because I really love it. It's probably, I'd say, of the books, of the movies that I saw for the first time researching the book, this one's arguably my favorite.
Why is that?
I just think it's really charming, and like it is everything that you want a great holiday rom-com to be. You have these people who are thrown together who are initially literally at odds with each other. And then they kind of come to see the best parts of each other. And particularly in the case of Stanwyck, her character Lee, you have a person where you get a glimpse of what her upbringing was like and what right. her sort of parental love or lack thereof turned her into. And then you also get an idea of like, well, what if she had had this mother instead? What if she'd grown up in this house and it had this level of love and support? What would she have turned into? So I love that it's like we talked about before, this idea of that, like, yes, Christmas is very much about the rituals and the decoration and the things like that that we you know look to in these movies. But I think it's also there's that intangible sense of the spirit of the season really bringing out each person's best side and best version. And you see that literally with Stanwyck's character here.
Yeah, so obviously I had never seen this movie. I know that'll mm-hmm. be a surprise to everybody. I loved this movie.
Oh, good.
I thought it was an absolute delight. Now, I will say it's always tough when you go back to the 40s and you see some of the caricatures, the help character, like in this movie, that's tough to watch. And
oh,
like,
believe me, by the standards of 1940, this is like super progressive.
Yeah,
I've seen much worse in the spirit.
I'm not forgiving
any of it, but I'm just saying there are. If we're gonna have degrees of this sort of thing, this movie is light in that department.
Well, that's good, but obviously I haven't seen a ton of them, so it's just like. So jarring. It's just like, wow, this is it, huh? But there was so much to love about this movie. I love that they were at odds, but they were always very, like, it was fun. It was like, you know, their bickering was very fun.
Sure.
the scene where they get with the cow is very funny.
Oh, yes.
my favorite character is Willie. I just think he's a delight. And that the song Willie's singing was everything you want.
Fun fact about Willie, played by Sterling Holloway, he was the original voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Wow.
So if you hear a little of that, oh bother in his voice, that he was the guy.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. It was just a really great movie. And I didn't, you know. I love that he took her into Canada, tried to talk her out, like doing all these things. And then the way that the movie ends was not the way that I expected it to end. I didn't expect her to just say, I'm guilty and I'm going to jail and we'll pick this back up. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a surprise. And I think it's not what a lot of filmmakers would have done, but I think it fits perfectly into her sort of arc of the course of this film where she is a better person. She has, you know, we talk a lot about redemption stories, you know, Scrooge is a redemption story. And I think even Home Alone is a redemption story and, you know, It's a Wonderful Life. So the person that she's at the beginning of the movie would have absolutely gotten out of the car in Canada and gone on the lam and fine. But after getting that glimpse of who she could potentially be while spending time, you know, with John's family in Indiana, then she's like, no, I gotta, I did the crime. I gotta serve the time.
Yeah. But I just, I found all of the characters to be just so charming and warm, and it was a movie. It just made me happy while I was watching it. And so,
yeah.
And this one felt, like a Shop Around the Corner. I felt, I even mentioned it, that it felt like everything, it was just taking its time, you know, like sure. One scene would last 10 minutes where it Hallmark, it takes 30 seconds or whatever. But, this one, I felt like it was a really great pace for me personally. It didn't have that same type of drag, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, this is the last film that was written by but not directed by Preston Sturges, who would, after this movie, would go on to become a filmmaker and was sort of famous for these his snappy patter, for sure. Mm-hmm. Big, you know, kind of like, you know, really interesting ensemble cast. Like a show like Gilmore Girls owes a lot to Sturges, both in that. in the speed of the dialogue, but in the sort of depth of all these great character actors giving you these odd, eccentric characters who pop up for a second or two, you know, and do their thing. And so here, yeah, you're already seeing him like with that gift of giving us these characters who we may not get a ton of time with them, but we absolutely understand who they are. There's the maiden aunt in this movie. There's a moment where when they're going through and she's digging out her old dress for Stanwyck to wear to the barn dance, and she finds this collection of letters.
Right.
And it's all you need to know.
Yep.
It's all you need to know why this woman never got married, you know, probably like the guy died in World War I or something, and she never, you know, opened her heart again. But it's so quick, and it tells you so much. And this movie is just littered with little bits like that. These little, you know, just like the weird guy who's like the guy who wants to arrest them for the cow stuff. And then the weird justice of the peace where they go and, you know, he's trying to throw him into jail. Just all of that stuff is really fun to watch. And, you know, Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck are just both like, they're so great. And weirdly enough, this isn't their most famous film together, and I'll get to that one later when we talk about recommendations. But in other films, they were in much sort of darker stories, but here it's very sweet and very charming. And the reason I didn't see this movie until I was older was because it's one of those movies that kind of just sort of fell out of print, and like I don't know if it was a copyright thing or whatever, but it really, it's been in the last 15 years, I'd say, that the TCM really sort of found it and made it a point to like, hey, we're airing this movie that you may or may not remember, and we're putting out a Blu-ray and doing all this stuff. And so, you know, that's, again, this is why I always sort of beat the drum for physical media, because like movies that you love will just disappear one day from streaming if you're not careful. Like some copyright will lapse, or somebody is going to want more money, or some weird thing is going to happen, or, you know, an entire streaming service could go kaput. So it's always great to just be able to own this stuff if you can.
You have to think, though, as we're 2022, you have to imagine that at some point everyone's going to have their own streaming. Like, it just feels like it is such an anomaly now that I, to go on Just Watch and not be able to at least find a movie that to buy on the, on a digital platform.
You would be surprised, especially like, as you know, like for example, like Sidney Poitier just died. And so we're doing a thing on Breakfast All Day for our Patreon, where we were like picking out films of his, you know, for streaming services, or Peter Bogdanovich, same thing. And like, I was stunned at how many titles I couldn't, not just that I couldn't find streaming, but that weren't even necessarily available for purchase. And so, obviously it so much is going on with streaming now. And a lot of these, you know, these platforms are trying to load up with as much stuff as possible, but so much of what they're trying to load up with is like, they're really interested in the new, the now, the modern, the shiny. So like, good luck on Netflix, say, finding movies made before 1960. There's like about, you know, a few dozen of them at best. And as you get older and you get further away from 1992, sure, you know, you're going to find that movies from your past are going to be harder to come by. So, you know, yes, I love to believe in the future where you push a button and it's all there at your fingertips. But the reality has been that it's just not. And so if there's movies you really care about, I think it's best to have a physical copy.
It just feels like at the very least, I should be able to buy a digital version.
Yeah, I like, you know, this it's movie, just... case in point, you know, like I, it was when Peacock launched, it was on Peacock and it was on, you know, I think it was on Criterion Channel for a while because they had a whole section devoted to director Mitchell Leeson, who did this movie. But like at the moment, not available, you know, and so it just these things kind of go with the wind sometimes, unless you want to watch like Jingle All the Way, which somebody's always going to have available. Thank but, God. You know, but movies like this, it's a, they're tougher to come by, but worth having, you know.
Yeah. Check out your local library, though. It's a great also resource. Good.
Yes.
It's a great resource to have. Like I looked it up, found it. So good to go. So it's always good to have that as a, if you don't want to buy a physical copy
sure.
to clutter your house or whatever, you can just
somebody use, has
somebody has one. Somebody has yeah. it.
So okay, apart from the manservant, who I grant you is, you know, has not aged well. Was there anything in the movie that else in the movie that to you felt so 1940 that you couldn't follow it, like any sort of slang or, you know, plot points or whatever?
No, it all felt like I could see this movie today and
awesome.
Basically beat for beat. It felt like I will say the ending was the most surprising part of it. Like I don't. It had all like. Go ahead.
Well, no, Hallmark movies, I think, have conditioned us to like,
yeah, sure.
you know, I have a running joke with my friend where like he used to come over on Sunday nights for dinner and I would start watching a movie and he'd watch about half of it and then leave. And the next day he would invariably call me and say, "Hey, how did it end?" And I would always text him back. They got together and it all worked out.
Yeah.
You know, so we're so used to they got together and it all worked out that deviating from that in the slightest was like, ooh, didn't see that coming.
But even like on a larger scale, like this is made by a big company, you know, having it end with her going to jail and not seeing like a year later, 3 years later, or some sort of sure. like, oh yeah, they do. We don't get to see the wedding. Like I'm going to go get a guy. And we're going to get married. Right? Like it's just, this is what's going to happen. That's well, it. So I it's mean, just,
yeah, it's I mean, part of why I think it's very much of its time is that, you know, starting in about 33, 34 and going to like the late 60s, it was around for a long time. There was a thing called the Hays Code, which was the reason, like before movies had ratings, pretty much every movie had to fit into these categories and not do certain things. And one of the rules on the list was that like crime always has to be punished. Mm. You know, nobody gets to get away with anything. So the fact that she does indeed shoplift at the beginning of the movie means she has to go to jail by the rules of the Hays Code. So wow. Yeah, you're right. They don't give you they don't cut to later so that you leave with a happy ending, but you leave knowing that she made the moral decision and that she's changed enough that she's become the person who would do that. And that you believe he's going to wait for her, you know?
I kept waiting again, going back to Hallmark conditioning. I kept waiting for something at the house to go missing, you know, and
oh, right.
the mom to be like, "Hey, did she take this type of?"
Like
I kept waiting. I kept waiting for that type of thing to happen, but it never did. And that was nice. It was nice that she just went to this house and was loved by a family for the first time. And just seeing how one, you know, week or weekend or however long it was with a loving family can change somebody. Like it's really beautiful. And I really appreciated his speech about people and you know, that we don't know their past and stuff like that. Like I thought it was all really great. So yeah. yay for the movie. Let's talk Christmas cheer, if you don't mind.
Yep, absolutely.
On some sort of 1 to 10 level, where are you placing this movie on a Christmas cheer list or on a scale, if you will?
I mean, I think like a good 6.5, you know, there's a big tree in the house. There's a really lovely sort of gift opening scene, you know, and the mom arranges for there to be a gift for Lee from John, even though he hadn't thought about it beforehand. You know, there's all the stuff with Willie and his Tyrolean hat, which is hilarious. Yeah. And then you get the dance, which is, I guess, more of a New Year's thing, but it's very wintry. There's like, you know what? I get this and Christmas in Connecticut confused because they both got Barbara Stanwyck. Is there a sleigh ride in this one or no?
No sleigh ride.
Okay. But nonetheless, it is very sort of wintry, you know, holiday season cheer. Yes.
Yeah. I have it above Shop Around the Corner. I sure. thought the Christmas was really good. The one thing that would have taken this from like a, I would watch this 100 days till Christmas in September when the countdown finally gets to 100. I'd throw this movie on. I'd be like, all right, I'm ready to get into the Christmas. I'm not getting out of the Christmas. I don't want just a little sprinkle of Christmas to help me transition. This I felt like was Christmassy, but like also had other stuff going on, which was fine. The thing that would have taken it from like a 6, 6.5, which I agree, I think is there, to like an 8 was in that sing-along scene. If they sang a Christmas song, I kept waiting. I wanted it, and it felt like they were setting it up for that. Like she even says, "How about you play that Christmas song that I love?" He doesn't do it. I kept waiting for it. It felt so Christmassy. They're all together at Christmas. He's finally home. Going to sit around the piano and play some Christmas songs. No, we don't get that. But still, I love that scene. But that would have taken it from a 6.5 to like an 8.
I hear you. I hear you.
I love a good Christmas sing-along.
Who doesn't, really?
That's what I'm saying. All right. Let's talk about a movie that you think of that's a good cross-reference, something that feels inspired, if you will.
So, yeah, this is not a Christmas movie and is not a comedy and is in many ways the antithesis of this film. But it's interesting to see these same two lead actors playing completely different characters in a completely different kind of movie. And that would be Billy Wilder's classic film noir, Double Indemnity. Frederick Murray plays an insurance agent. Barbara Stanwyck is the unhappy wife of a rich guy. They begin having an affair and conspire to murder her husband so that she can collect the insurance money. And of course, nothing from there goes smoothly. But they have this really
fun.
Yeah, that like their chemistry exists in this movie too, but it's in a very sort of edgy, like they're constantly sort of trying to one up one another. Like, he makes some like kind of wisecrack about her, and she says, "I wonder what you mean by that." And he says, "I wonder if you wonder." Like, just a lot of really snappy stuff, and it's like it's one of those like passions born in hell, because they're totally wrong for each other, and they're going to push each other to do awful, awful things. And of course, you know, it's all going to turn out badly for everybody. But it's a classic movie, and they're great in it. So if you've never seen Double Indemnity, that's my pick.
What did you say the year that was released?
That's 49, I want to say. I'll pull it up real quick.
How many movies are they in together?
Like 3 or 4, oddly enough. But
was that a norm back then, that once they found something that worked, they just kind of kept doing it?
Yeah, I mean, to different extents. I mean, like, you know, if you're Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, obviously, yes, you are a pairing. But yeah, it was not uncommon where, oh, look, you guys were in this movie together and it made money. Let's try that again. But I mean, like, McMurray and Stanwyck weren't like what we think of as sort of an iconic screen duo. But they did make like 3 or 4 movies together. Double Indemnity is 1944, so just 4 years after this.
Oh, okay. I mean, I loved them together. I thought they had just such good chemistry. So I'd love to watch them again. I just felt like this movie, when you told me about it last week, I felt like I was like, is it a fake relationship? And it's not, but it feels like the godfather of fake relationship movies that we have come to love. Like, the throwing somebody completely new into a family for Christmas is just such a fun plot. Now, I appreciate, like, it was nice that they didn't do the fake relationship. I actually felt like it gave a lot of room for her to grow, and just like, it's just about her growing, which I thought was really great. You didn't need the fake relationship part of it, but it did feel akin to that. Like,
I'm bringing this person home for Christmas, which has connotations, but those connotations do not actually exist.
Yeah. I mean, for the first night, I think that, cause he doesn't get to explain to his mom really who she is until after the first night, maybe. And she's like, oh, I know who she is. Like, I know it. Like, and he's like, no, like, actually,
no, really,
going on here. It feels like it's in that kind of family of fake relationships, which is just one of my favorite things. So any of those movies will do. All right, next week it's my pick.
Okay,
my pick. So headphones off. Next week, I'm gonna make Alonzo watch a movie that I just love so much. It's Christmas with the Cranks. Next week on Deck the Hallmark. and Alonzo's coming back in. Alonzo, are you? You don't know the movie, but are you excited for it?
Oh, always. Can't wait.
It's your favorite part of the week. It's coming, buddy. All right. We'll see you next week. Well, technically, I'll see you tomorrow, but Alonzo, I'll see you next week. And until yes, then, sir. Maybe we'll be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmarks of Bramble Jam podcast. It's presented by Philo TV. It's produced by Brandon Gray and recorded live in, Greenville, South Carolina. Set decor is by Plum at Haywood Mall. For more information on Deck the Hallmark, you can go to deckthehallmark.com. For more information on Bramble Jam Podcast Network, you can go to bramblejampodcast.com.